Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominic Gates, joined as always by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. The Packers close out the regular season with a dud, losing 24-22 to rival Chicago Bears. The winning streak is over against Chicago, and I guess ironic way to lose on a walk-off field goal. And this is where the Packers stand. It's crazy what 11-6 to close out the regular season, 1-5. In the division, a fingertip away from being 0-6 in this division, which is kind of crazy to think about. So let's just run through a lot that kind of stood out in this game. And Ryan, I'll let you start off. Just initial takeaways and observations from this Packers game.
Hey, not for nothing, 0-3 at home against the NFC North.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No.
This is a playoff team. It's a good team. That shows you the margin in this NFC North, even with the Bears now. It's, you know, and I understand that they didn't have Jordan Love most of the day and whatnot, but 0-3 against the NFC North. Look, the Bears still suck, all right? Like, they're not a good football team, which only makes this loss all that more troubling going into the postseason. Yeah. This, to me, was mismanagement from Matt LaFleur. The fact they're inside a minute and there's a 3rd-and-2, and you're on the fringe of field goal range, and you don't have a plan. You don't have a next step for what happens on 3rd-and-2, and you have to call a timeout. When the Bears are down to 1, you should have all the leverage in that situation, and you hand it over by calling a timeout and not forcing the Bears to make the brutal choice of, do you spend your last timeout? Do you let the clock – clearly, they would have had to take a timeout there. It was mismanagement there. And then whatever on the penultimate play, the 3rd-and-11, the 18-yard – they give up the middle of the field. I that was the type of defense that you play if you're protecting a touchdown lead and not giving up the touchdown rather than a field goal and – that situation. I don't know what this coaching staff was doing down the stretch. It ultimately turns out that the Bears can beat Matt LaFleur if Matt LaFleur completely mismanages the last minute of a game. It was inexplicable to me.
Spoon, what were your observations and takeaways?
Well, everything to me is related to what their playoff situation is and who they're playing in the playoffs. I mean, there were a lot of things that went wrong. I mean, their special teams were terrible.
Disaster.
You know? Another coach.
I mean, that's a total thing that would have turned the game around. Mm-hmm. They're almost a disaster on the punt team, and then the punt return. How they did not know that plan when it had been run against them previously at Soldier Field. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. It's beyond me. And related to that, that did hurt them, not calling that calling that timeout. That was a dumb move. Like, mm-hmm. let the clock go. Make your decision to call a timeout after it's run 40 seconds. Just let it run and make them decide. But that's what he's got Rich Bisaccia for, right there, right next to him. You know, who should be telling them 55-yard field goal, no problem. You know, we got it. We can do that. You know, don't call a timeout. You know, just let it run. I mean, that's what those guys are there for. And that's why he's standing right next to them. Because coaches, you know, I'm not making an excuse for LaFleur. It was a dumb, dumb decision. But there's so many other layers to what went wrong and how that applies to next week when they have to face the Eagles. In the grand scheme of things, they screwed it up, but it didn't matter because Washington won. Mm-hmm. So they get a little bit of a redo. What did they what did they find out about themselves in this game? Well, one, they're nothing without Josh Jacobs. Yep. Two, their passing game is somewhat archaic now. It's mechanical. It's, you know, it's paint by numbers. And they got to figure out what that, you know, why that is happening. For all the analysts that he's brought in, I think he's tied himself in a knot and not letting the game just be what the players do best. And I think the players have to have a little bit of a say in what they're doing too. So, yeah, they're a mess in that regard. At least they're a mess in the matchup. Mm-hmm. If you look at the matchup, I do think there's one, I'm talking a lot here, but there's one avenue to victory, and that is run the ball and play good defense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they played good defense today, you know, for the most part. Philly's not unbeatable from that standpoint. Their defense is really good, but that's going to have to be their recipe, is run the ball and play really good defense.
Not for nothing, Jalen Hurts will have thrown 4 passes in a month. That doesn't hurt.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. Yeah, I don't know. Well, we can get into Philadelphia more. Yeah. I know mm-hmm. people are going to want to, but yeah. I see everything in the reflection of, okay, mm-hmm. how does that translate? And I think bigger picture is something's wrong with their offense. Yeah.
Spoon just said a lot here that I want to follow up on. Yes. First of all, the punt return. How in the world do you not, like, obviously the Packers bit on the fake protection and the fake blocking scheme and just lost the ball in the air. But why does that even that matter? How do you not know before the play? How do all 11 not know? This is the side of the field that the ball is going to be punt to. It is going to be punt to this corner. Mm-hmm. No matter what the Chicago Bears do, you run everyone to this corner.
Right.
You go to the ball and not
How
the
is that not communicated?
Yeah.
Nothing else matters, right? You go to the right corner. You drop back to the right. That's all you need to know. That shouldn't happen. The offense, I am at a place, Spoon, you have said this for over a year. You've said this since going back to last season, and I haven't been there. But over these last 2 weeks especially, I'm there. They don't have a number one receiver, and this group is not going to have a number one receiver, and that is as big of a need for this offseason whenever it comes as just about anything. Maybe not as big as pass rush. They're going to really have – but right. I put it up there with corners. I mean, they have a really good slot receiver and a lot of guys that are talented but not consistent enough to be even close to a number one. I'm sorry, Christian Watson, it's not even the injury thing with me. It's your number one perimeter receiver can't have less than 650 yards on a season. Like, that's not a number one receiver. He's got a very fine NFL skill set, and he can be dangerous in the right situations. That's not Amon-Ra St. Brown. It's not A.J. Brown. It's not Justin Jefferson. Your number one receiver in a high-functioning passing game cannot be a slot receiver and a tight end. Unless you have Patrick Mahomes, right? They're a unicorn, the Kansas City Chiefs. That's not what a high-functioning level offense has. They've got to address that this offseason. I don't know what it means for the playoff run, but that's an issue. Rich Bisaccia telling Matt LaFleur, well, you're right. I absolutely agree with that. Ultimately, that's Matt LaFleur's – that's where the buck stops. Like, he has to tell Rich Bisaccia, hey, it's 3rd-and-2. It's your job. He has to make sure that his subordinates do their job and say, before this play, you tell me what the number is so that I can make a quick decision that's the right decision without burning a timeout and costing the game.
Yeah.
That ultimately – that trickles down, not up. So – I put that on Matt LaFleur. There's a lot of issues here. And all those things, to Spoon's point, if you mismanage a playoff game, if you can mismanage this game, you can mismanage a playoff game. That ends the season. You know, this game, it ultimately didn't matter. The Commanders came back. They beat the Dallas Cowboys. They would have been the 7th seed even if they beat the Bears today. It didn't matter. But next week it does. And if you can mismanage this game, you can mismanage that one.
Yeah, but especially in a game like this where it should have been treated like a business trip. Like, why are you not playing clean football?
Yeah.
If anything, you should at least be able to play clean football in a game like this. You don't have to score 45 or 50 points, but you're having fumbles. You're running jet sweeps on 4th downs when it hasn't even worked. It's just there's so many little instances in this game, it's just, even when Malik Willis is in the game, you still have a chance to win the game, and you already alluded to some of that mismanaged issue. So the biggest thing, it's the end of the regular season, and we're talking about some pretty glaring concerns before you go to Philadelphia next week. So it's just not looking very promising right now with this team. And, I mean, we can stick with the offense and with the running game. It is what it is. You kind of mentioned with Josh Jacobs, obviously if he had more carries, who knows what the game would have looked like. But this was a game where you should have really tried to work on your passing game, and it wasn't there. And no one at this point is really taking the reins of that, you said that number one role. It was Jaden Reed for a little bit to start the season. It has been no one since then. But running the ball with, you say, Josh Jacobs playing good defense, is that a recipe that could work, or is it too early to tell?
Oh, it could work. Mm-hmm. It could definitely work. If they played Josh Jacobs the entire game, I think they would have won the game. I think they would have worn down their defense. The one thing the Bears haven't been doing very well is playing the run. But they did need to pass, and they needed to get their passing game going. And they obviously tried early on, but there's just this disconnect. How many times do you actually see Love hit a guy on the run? It's often sitting down. Now, they're playing cover three, but it's just not, there's not a lot of run and catch. So he's got Christian Watson for an easy first down on the out route, and he throws a bad ball. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if Christian Watson dropped it or not. It's an easy first down if he throws a good ball.
Right, too, yeah.
Luke Musgrave, for some reason, he double clutched on that, and then he throws it almost in the dirt. And if he hits him on the run, I don't know. I don't know if he would have gotten all that much more, but it sure would have looked more impressive, and that's part of being good. What play was it? Third and six, and he's looking over here to two slants, and Tucker Kraft is standing wide open on the left.
Yeah.
And it's like, why how come Tucker Kraft isn't like, okay, if they drop out, I'm going to be wide open, my hands up, Or, why isn't there a signal with Love? Look, they're going to drop out, and I'm going to be standing right here wide open. Love also could have thrown that to him, but he did the safe thing, and he tried to dump it off. He should have just thrown it.
Yeah.
I don't know how they cure that. I think they need to get together, like, as an offense, players, and they need to talk about what it is they do best and just do that and stop trying to be, the analyst's dream and how you're going to break down a defense and just play to your strengths.
Yeah, and it's almost like there's no trust there right now. Because it's really fascinating to me what two of the more explosive plays were Malik Willis, the 41-yard catch for Malik Key, the deep ball to Jaden Reed. It was underthrown, but Reed did a good job in adjusting and catching it. But it's very interesting when your backup quarterback has more of that, I'm just going to chuck it and see if a receiver will make a play, when you're not seeing a whole lot of that with Jordan Love and these receivers.
I look at this a little differently, and I would say I think I look at it a little simpler. And you're alluding to it, Spoon, but it's accuracy. Jordan Love is nowhere near accurate enough, period, to function at a high level. He is missing too many throws. He has a very talented arm. He has a big arm. He can make big plays. But when you are this inefficient with your accuracy at this level, especially next week, starting next week in the playoffs, he's nowhere near accurate enough right now. And it's been like that for a little while. So a week ago in Minnesota, what did the Vikings do? They just drop everyone back, give the underneath stuff, and dare Jordan Love to be accurate enough to beat him, to throw him out of that coverage. He couldn't do it. He didn't do it again today. If he's not accurate, if he's not more accurate, I don't know if anything else matters. He has to hit the throws. I mean, it's that simple to me.
Yeah. What are some other things that you could say jump out and set out to you offensively before we kind of move on?
Well, they're going to have to be a lot cleaner up front, because they're going to be facing just an absolutely massive challenge with Jalen Carter in the middle of the Philadelphia Eagles. And so they're going to have to double there, and so their tackles are going to have to just play out of their minds, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. Rashid Walker had a really bad holding penalty. Zach Tom, was the one who got blown out on the, third and two, mm-hmm. right? So I don't think their offensive line's playing at a real high level right now. I thought they were playing better earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. somehow they have to figure out, like I said, they have to figure out what they do best. They know they're in trouble now if some team plays man coverage on them because Christian Watson was the only guy who could beat man coverage. Maybe Dobbs can do it and they can dink and dunk that way. But, you know, like a day-to-day when, you know, I asked Jordan Love, well, did they switch up their coverages or anything? No, they were cover three pretty much the whole game. Yeah. Well, geez, you should have been able to chew that to pieces, and they couldn't. And I do think they're going to have to highlight somebody. I think they're going to have to highlight Tucker Kraft or Romeo Dobbs. I mean, two guys who are fairly reliable.
Yeah.
And one of them should wind up with nine catches or something like that, you know? Figure out a way to scheme them open. And in the meantime, you're just pounding Josh Jacobs like crazy.
Yeah.
I think Tucker Kraft makes sense because he fits what this offense is better than anything. This is a power running offense. When you have that, having a playmaking tight end fits right into that, especially with the way that you can camouflage and disguise, use Tucker Kraft as a guy that, okay, are you blocking here? Are you release? And it's high efficiency throws for Jordan Love, who needs as many of those as he can get because he's not accurate enough. So giving him easy completions, camouflaging run and pass, all these things to me point to Tucker Kraft.
The other thing is maybe, you know, maybe they got to go to more double tight end sets. And, you know, Musgrave looks like he's kind of rounding out a little bit. You know, he probably can be a little bit of a threat, you know, off of play action and stuff. But, you know, just I wouldn't even, you know, try to hide the fact that they're going to run the ball. And just make Philadelphia stop it. And then occasionally you get play action, you hit those tight ends. I don't know. That might be the only one. The problem with that is that neither of those guys are great blockers. It would be better if they were like George Kittle and they could catch and block. But, you know, that's a unicorn. Yeah. You know, there aren't many guys who can do that. Yeah. So, but I think they could get away with doing a little bit more of that.
It is important, I think, to note that we really don't know what Matt LaFleur schematically might have in mind next week. I think that it's very high likelihood, even late in the season, even the playoffs, that there could be a fair amount of unscouted looks. Let's emphasize how the Packers came into this game offensively. They wanted to get to a big lead. As I asked Matt LaFleur today, I asked him about the plan, the script for Josh Jacobs. He said, well, nothing went according to plan. They wanted to get up to a big lead, then pull guys. That just didn't happen. But they pulled Josh Jacobs early second quarter after his 15th rushing touchdown of the season. Record 8-game streak with a rushing touchdown, the longest streak in Packers history. Early second quarter on, he's not playing. Jordan Love has the elbow injury, but he absolutely could have played and was throwing passes on the sideline throughout the game. In fact, Malik Willis got hit in the thumb today. And for a time there in the second half, it appeared that Matt LaFleur said it appeared that it looked like Jordan Love would have to go in, but then Malik Willis was fine. Mm-hmm. Matt LaFleur made a decision that we're just, you know, okay, one hit on our guy's throwing elbow is too much. We're not going to risk anymore. He shut down Jordan Love. And he did so knowing that Dallas, Washington was very close. I asked Matt LaFleur point blank, were you aware of what was happening across the league? And he said, yeah, I knew that game was as close as could be, and obviously Washington ends up pulling it out. So he knows that, hey, you win this game, there's a real chance you could be a sixth seed and avoid Philly. And he makes the decision to sit Josh Jacobs most of this game to shut down Jordan Love. And you can bet your butt that he didn't show a single thing schematically that the Eagles might use against him in a week. So you have to keep all that in mind. But with that said, this is still a Bears team they should have had a lot more success against.
The only thing he did show was putting Malik Willis on the field with Jordan Love. Now, that's a good thing to throw out there right before the playoffs.
Yeah,
you know?
I wonder if that might have been on purpose just to give the Philadelphia Eagles something else to think about you might not actually do in the playoffs. Right. You know, like, hey, Philly, this could happen. Let's waste your time this week on preparing for this. We're not actually going to do that.
Yeah. I thought they should do that all year.
Mm-hmm. I have too.
Malik Willis. And I still don't understand why they don't run more with him. You know, why everything is all the read option. Now, it's harder to run read option now because teams all line up wide and they don't give you that wide. And so that's why the Packers have had so much success with Josh Jacobs up the middle is because teams are worried about, you know, the edge guys. But I think there's stuff to be made there. Now, regarding Love, I don't know if he would have been any good if he came back. He said in the press thing that his hand was still bothering him, and he couldn't feel it. And he could throw on the sideline, but the question I have is, why didn't Malik Willis tell him he couldn't grip the ball on the play, for the two-point conversion? Mm-hmm. Then you call something different.
Because he needs film, Spoon. He needs film. I'm with you. But, I mean, you're a guy that, hey, you're trying to get your next job. You're going to have to amputate that thumb to be taken off the field.
I guess. But that's, if they call a passing play and you can't grip the ball, I mean, tell them, or call him out or something. But because that was a pretty important play.
Yeah. It was very, like I said, just such a unique game. And then, obviously, with Watson going out in the second quarter –
yeah,
non-contact.
That's
it didn't look
devastating.
Good. Yeah,
I'm sure it's an ACL or something like that. Yeah. I mean, LaFleur didn't couch it and say we got to see the tests. He's like, I'm not real confident, and that's as much as Matt LaFleur saying the guy's out for the season.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that was
a shame. Blow. You know, he didn't. I don't know if they should have kept him out. They probably wouldn't have played him if Romeo Doubs didn't get sick.
Right.
But if he did it there, he probably was going to do it next week. Yeah. On another grass surface. I don't know.
Yeah. And then it's a crapshoot anyways, because the knee with the bone bruise was different from what happened, like, in this non-contact injury. So, except it's a crapshoot. And, like, it's the game. That's football. Anything can happen. So, it's difficult. Is there anything, any last words on the offense before we talk a little bit? Defense and special teams? Anything jumping at you wanted to jump on?
No, there's always stuff to talk about.
True.
I don't know, though, if there's any. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. They're going to be playing a really good Eagles defense next week, and they're going to have to be a hell of a lot better than this.
Yeah.
Yeah, quit the end of rounds to Jaden Reed.
Yep.
I mean, it's just not only are they not working, but it's you got to be careful with him, mm-hmm. And he's a guy who runs a lot of miles in a game. Get him fresh. Get him ready for, the playoffs, and stop asking him to do all that stuff. I think, his body could use a break.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't look like the same guy he was early in the year.
No.
And he's probably beat up,
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, they do. They definitely need to just get rid of that play completely. Watson's gotten hurt on it. Reed has fumbled on it. It's not working.
Matt LaFleur's not going to do it, though.
They got stopped on the fourth down.
Yeah. Matt LaFleur's not going to do it, though.
No.
He was asked point blank today if that's a play they need to get rid of. He's like, not necessarily. Like,
he brought up the point it was a block away from being a different story.
Well, your guys can't make the blocks. They stop running it.
Only thing I will say is that it is, I think, an important function to riff on for later in the game, because it can be a decoy play, it can be, but when it's third and four, fourth and three, whatever it was, and it's not fooling anyone. There's been way too much film on this to catch anyone off guard.
Yeah, especially the if, it's like, if I had the right lottery number, I'd be a millionaire, but I still didn't get the number and I still don't have that money. So if there was a block there, it would have worked, but it hasn't worked. I think that's the biggest issue.
I mean, I think some of it's tied to what they do with Josh Jacobs, which is sleight of hand and trying to get the linebackers on a move, moving with all that motion and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, the Bears, if you go back and look at that play on the fourth down play, they just – everybody shifted to the left. They knew exactly what was coming.
Yeah.
So.
Which is kind of unique in ways how sometimes it has been a little predictable, you can say, with the offense in terms of what they want to do. As far as with the defense, at least – I mean, not the worst performance, and it started off at times promising. Rashawn Gary was able to get a sack. The defense, had a little bit of energy there and was able to get off the field. But, those end-of-the-game plays, you say the giving up the 18-yard slant, some of those little things, they were just burnt in some situations. Just, what do you overall take away, Spoon, from the defense?
I mean, it was a great performance for the most part. I mean, they were dominating, and – Caleb Williams is going to make some plays. Once in a while, he's going to make some plays. But Of course, the horse collar tackle was really bad. I mean, that hurt them a lot. Mm-hmm. But I thought they should have just gone after him that last series. Just don't even give him a chance. I mean, I know the Bears probably, you know, max protected because they got killed by Seattle in the fourth quarter. They just got blitzed into oblivion. Mm-hmm. But you're getting, you know, you're getting through there. Get set up Edgerrin Cooper for a sack. I mean, do something because, you know, it just hate to see stationary defenses like that. And, you know, it's really ironic, not ironic, but it's really interesting because I was reading Thomas Brown's comments. Mm-hmm. And so DJ Moore's route was supposed to be an outcut. He's supposed to throw it to the boundary. And then the Packers called timeout. They saw that Valentine was playing the boundary. So they came back to the same play, and they were looking for that again. But then they saw Carrington Valentine was on the boundary, and Caleb Williams gave a signal to Moore, and he ran the slant. And boom, they hit him. And Carrington Valentine should have laid on DJ Moore for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what experienced good teams. Where is, you know, where is that being communicated? How come nobody's communicating that, you know, you stay on them and if you can even nudge the ball away or something like that, you know, every team does that. You know, it's hard to get up.
Yeah.
But he was, DJ Moore got up. He wasn't touched. He went and handed the ball to the center. Center gave it to the, you know, officials. So that was a big mistake, too.
Matt LaFleur said that after the game. We were not slow getting off the pile. But
you know,
everything else is on that play, which is frankly the only play I care about in this defensively in this game. And that was a game-deciding play. Everything else was awful from the coaching staff. How do you come out at the 49-yard line, 15 seconds left, plenty of time. I asked Matt LaFleur, what's the cutoff for a team to complete a pass in the middle of the field, get up to the line of scrimmage, and spike the clock? He said it takes 12 seconds. Yeah. You know how long it took? It took exactly 12 seconds, mm-hmm. 15 seconds to mm-hmm. three. You know this. You know you can. You have eyes. You can see the scoreboard. You can see 15 seconds. Oh, that's three more than 12. Better protect the middle of the field. And you come out and rush three. You have three defensive backs on the left sideline. You leave Carrington Valentine alone against DJ Moore. Nobody on that side of the field. And you have three defensive backs 25 to 30 yards off the ball. I'm trying to be nice. That is malpractice. I mean, that you can't line up your defense like that in that situation. And I'll tell you, I have a high threshold to criticize coaching and schematics because ultimately these guys know more about coaching schematics than what we do. When you can see a defense before a snap and you realize that, I can realize, oh my goodness, this is a disaster. This is going to be a disaster for them. And they don't, when it's that bad, like, I don't know what they were thinking. They knew better too. 12 seconds.
The only thing that hurts you in that situation, if you're playing up, is whether they throw it over your head. I kind of misspoke about what Thomas Davis said. Actually, now that I recall it, on the first time, they were going to go to the right to one of those guys that's triples they had out there, and let him run for it, and then they were going to have him go out of bounds. And then when they saw DJ Moore lined up with Carrington Valentine, they switched over to that route. And they thought about going deep. I think before the timeout, they thought about going deep to him too. But why don't you have a guy right in the middle of the field? You know?
Yeah.
It's okay to have two guys deep. If they complete a deep ball, that's better. I mean, as long as you tackle them, that's better. They're not getting a field goal off if they complete something over 25 yards because they're not getting back to the line of scrimmage. So why are you not enticing them to throw it deep down the field?
Yeah.
And why don't you have a guy in the middle just in case they decide that's what they're going to do?
I think the worst thing that happened ultimately was the depth of the back line. You can play it happy medium. You don't have to give 30 yards Because like you said, if it's a deep ball and it's in bounds, and it was going to be in bounds. I mean, they did it. The one thing they did well was they guarded the boundary. Like, there was no getting out of bounds with that mm-hmm. defensive formation. So if there's a deep ball, it's going to be in bounds. It's not going to be a touchdown. I'm fine with, you know, rushing three defenders. That whatever. You want more guys in covers. I get that. It doing a 30, that's asinine. Like, 30 yards is just – it makes no sense whatsoever. And it hurt him. It absolutely hurt him.
It's so fascinating to hear all of this because throughout the Bears season with the disaster with Eberflus and all the late game issues,
yep.
It's fascinating to see an interim coach in Thomas Brown have the guys in this moment and in crunch time ready to play. Mm-hmm. There was creativity with the formations. It forced Green Bay to call a timeout. They took matchups that they liked and exposed some things. So I guess it for me, it adds on to some of the concerns with Green Bay is that a team that lost 10 in a row, had an interim coach, lost by, 30 points or more through, the last 3-4 games or so and only scored a field goal against Seattle. They come in here and have a pretty good game plan, execute it. So it was fascinating at times to watch
how
it played. Yeah.
They outcoached the Packers.
On that drive, I think they did. Mm-hmm. I think the rest of the time the defense did fine. I thought they dominated. You know, they were going to give up some points at some point.
Right.
But, you know, they had turnovers. They had two huge turnovers.
Right.
I mean, Garrett Valentine's hit on DJ Moore was huge. Yeah. That turned the whole game around. So I don't have a problem with, you know, what they did for the game. I have a problem with what they did on the last drive.
Here is my problem with the Packers defense. Not near enough pressure. Caleb Williams had way too much time, and I don't care if you're max protecting, if you're going against max protection with the Bears. This is the most sacked quarterback in the league. It's a quarterback that holds on to the ball way too long, and there's no excuse even against max protection to not harass this guy with pressure. And the fact that they couldn't, I mean, they had a sack on the very first play of the game when Caleb Williams mishandles the snap and Rashawn Gary gets to him. Other than that, Edgar Cooper had a decent shot at the guy, and he didn't break down. He was, you know, unblocked, didn't break down. Kind of, he moves really fast on the field, and he just kind of sailed right past him. Other than that, there were very few opportunities, very few times that they really affected Caleb Williams. He was running around all day back there.
He did have to throw away some balls.
Usually, like, after, you know, really holding on to it, though.
Yeah, I mean, where they kind of chased him, but he likes to get out of the pocket too,
yeah.
And he's really good at escaping pressure. But your point is valid.
I think that's concerning.
That's just what they do every week. They don't have a, you know, 4-man pass rush.
Yeah. And, you know, a month ago we're looking at how they did in Seattle. We're, you know, looking at, okay, the Saints, they got some pressure on an offensive line that hadn't given up a lot of sacks, and you're starting to think, okay, maybe this pass rush is mounting into form. Well, at this point, you just can't say that. I mean, this was an opportunity to really springboard that pass rush, which I thought was as important as anything in this game today on either side of the ball, continuing that momentum for this pass rush, and they entered the playoffs with really none. I mean, it was a big letdown for the pass rush today, in my opinion.
Yeah, and they're facing a really good offensive line next week.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
I think that's we can kind of transition into heading into, you know, Philadelphia, and obviously we'll talk more about it, you know, later in the week in a later podcast. But it goes back to just some of the things, like those capitalization moments. Like you said, Xavier McKinney gets interception. The next offensive series, it's a turnover on downs. Like, you have to find a way to turn those into points mm-hmm. and get touchdowns. The Carrington Valentine forced fumble, Bullard recovers it, you get a field goal out of it. You know, it's like you have to capitalize on some of these mistakes, and now you're in that situation where you say your backs are against the wall. You're the Philadelphia team who you've already lost to, or if you had to play a Minnesota team who you lost to twice, or Detroit, you're going to have to earn your money's worth throughout these playoffs. And again, I think that's just my biggest thing. Heading into Philadelphia, there's so much they have to just do a better job of and be aware of because of, you know, just how talented Philadelphia is. Just early thoughts heading into that next game.
It's so hard to know. I mean, if you would have asked me exactly 1 year ago right now heading down to Dallas, none of us would have thought there's any chance they're leaving Dallas with a win, and then they just stomped them, right? Mm-hmm. And Dallas had its quarterback, Dak Prescott, throw more than 4 passes in the previous month. So you never know. They're going to be big underdogs. They should be big underdogs. I'm picking the Eagles to win. I'll tell you that now. With that, so long as Jalen Hurts clears concussion protocol. So if it's Kenny Pickett, then maybe not. But if they can stop the run, they can win this game. Like to win, that they're going to have to stop the run, because you have to think that Jalen Hurts is probably going to have some rust, right? But it's not going to matter if Saquon Barkley just goes off. And this is a bona fide top 10 rushing defense this season, but it's also going to be by far the biggest test that they've faced all year. It's bigger than even down in Brazil on a bad field and not in Philadelphia, you know, week one. So if they stop to win this game, they're going to have to stop the run. If they stop the run, I think they're actually going to have they're going to be in it. They're going to have a chance to win. Then it comes down to, can Jordan Love hit enough passes for them to have the balance that's necessary to beat a really good defense in Philadelphia? And that's I haven't seen it. I don't know how that's going to happen, but it doesn't mean it won't. He's going to have to go prove it.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, I on paper, I don't see it. I'm going to watch Philadelphia a little bit more this week and see, you know, most of what I remember about them. You know, they gave up a bunch of, ton of yards in that first game, but that was Vic Fangio's first game there. It was also Jeff Hafley's first game. I don't know. I don't think the game will be anything like that. I think it'll be different. But Philadelphia's just gradually gotten better, 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 and the Packers have just kind of been winning games and not really hit their stride. So it's going to be a tough game.
Yeah,
they just don't. They don't have a difference maker on offense. You know, like Christian Watson is a difference maker because he can score a touchdown anytime he touches the ball. Josh Jacobs is, you know, a difference maker in a different way. In a, I'll carry 28 times and gain 140 yards. He's not, I'm going to break this game open or I'm going to turn, you know, a play around by running a 70-yard run. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, lacking that hurts going to the playoffs.
Yeah, I guess Brandon McManus is a difference maker.
Yeah,
like,
sure is.
Like,
wow.
He, wow. It's, yeah. I mean, when you're, I guess one of the MVPs of the game was the kicker.
If Matt LaFleur remembers he's on the sideline, and oh, by the way, a 55-yard field goal is certainly makeable for this guy and not call a timeout, yeah, he can be a difference maker.
Yeah, goes back to
should have been the story of the game. I mean, that was an incredible kick.
Incredible.
I meant to cold ask LaFleur what his distance was. I didn't get to McManus in the locker room, so I don't know.
Are we sure he knows?
He must.
I'm not trying to like. I'm not sure he really knew.
Well, Sacha does.
Why call a timeout if you know what the distance is? Oh, he's there. That's the distance. Okay.
I think what he was trying to say, his excuse was that he was trying to decide whether to go for it, whether he had a play to go for it. Now, in his mind, or you know, in his ear, should be 55's okay. 55's okay. So he can hit it. You know, and then, you know, you let the clock keep going. Mm-hmm. You know, let it go down to one. If you want to call a timeout with, you know, 1 second left on the clock, you can, it'd be down to 18 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, he's thinking too, like, well, if I go for it, then we're trying to continue to move the ball. I don't know. It was not a good decision.
For hypothetical, let's say the Packers don't call timeout there. The ball is now in – the decision-making ball is now in Thomas Brown's hands. Does he call a timeout? You can't. You have to call a timeout there, right? You can't let the clock run absolutely all the way down.
If they hadn't lost 2 yards, then maybe you would not call a timeout. But it was fourth and four because they lost 2 yards on Emmanuel Wilson's run.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm Thomas David, I'm definitely calling a timeout.
My point is – how does Matt LaFleur not know that? Oh, you feel like you're uncertain. You don't know what. That guy's got to call the timeout.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing rushing to call the timeout? And then, oh, by the way, that's your last timeout.
Yeah.
And when Caleb Williams scrambles at midfield for 4 yards up the middle and it's 34 seconds left, the Bears are pretty much dead at that point.
Mm-hmm.
How do you not know he's supposed management to call the timeout? I don't understand that.
Game management, that's been the issue. I mean, he won a challenge today, I guess. There's
he broke the streak.
He broke the streak and won a challenge. But, with on the Musgrave catch. But, yeah.
All of that could show its ugly face in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
But the number one priority for them is to figure out their offense, because combination of their offense and defense, they could be pretty good. You know, they have enough defense to be pretty good. If they could get enough offense, you know, a passing game with that run game, then they'd have a shot.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, playing complementary football is key, but the defense was the only position that showed up at all today. The offense was...
Need more pass rush, though.
Yeah, besides that, but the offense was lethargic, the special teams, a nightmare outside of McManus. So there's a lot of things that kind of reared its ugly head in this regular season, and a lot of those are so many things that just can't show up next week, or you're leaving Philadelphia with the loss and an early exit in the playoffs, and that's going to be the name of the game.
I was thinking this too. We don't need to waste much time on this because ultimately there's bigger things. But from Chicago's perspective, what a significant way for Caleb Williams to end his first season.
Mm. Oh yeah,
to not just beat the Packers, but come have that drive. Mm. That's your last drive of your rookie year, and now you're going into your first full off season. Chicago is a team. We learned this last year with Jordan Love. Even if they hadn't made the playoffs, like every single game that you have with that young guy developing, every single game matters for the future. This, if you're the Packers, that's what has to tick you off the most, is that you let these guys that you have down, you've had down for years, you let them off the mat a little bit, just enough to feel pretty good about themselves going into the offseason with the guy you know is talented. Caleb Williams is a really talented guy that the Bears, if they get it right, which I understand, pin the tail on the donkey, you never know. But if they actually get it right, they should win with this quarterback. And, hey, you gave him a little bit of belief, you gave him a lot of confidence, and a very significant day for the Chicago Bears, mm-hmm. And that has to tick you off. As Matt LaFleur said, you got to flush it immediately. There's bigger fish to fry. Yeah. But when you get into the offseason, whenever that is, it's going to have to tick you off a little bit that in this incredibly competitive division, the one team you had down, you just let them back up.
You could tell it meant a lot to the Bears. Like, yes, I thought they were going to mail it in eventually. Mm-hmm. Like, if the Packers had gotten up by 14, 20 points, I think they would have mailed it in. But man, their celebration was like they had won the Super Bowl. I mean, that was a massive celebration, and yeah. So, you know, good for them.
Losing 2 months straight.
Yeah, it was the celebration of a team that has had nothing to celebrate forever, not just this season, forever. And you gave them a high note with a really talented rookie quarterback to ride off into the sunset of this offseason and feel good about themselves. And you can build on that. Mm-hmm. You absolutely can.
Get the right coach and some offensive linemen. You're
the one team you had
got a shot. Yeah, so it's crazy. Before we wrap it up, any final words or parting thoughts as the last game in Lambeau this season?
As we speak, we don't know when they're playing. God, don't let them put it on Monday night.
No. Yep.
Come on.
That's my only request.
I can't imagine they do that. I don't know. My guess would be Sunday.
Is it a good game anymore? I mean,
I think it could be a 3:25, a Sunday 3:25
Packers,
game. Maybe.
You know that the Packers always draw. The Eagles are the 2 seed. They played together in a barn burner week one. My guess is Sunday.
I think the highlight game is Saturday night. So I think there's a chance it could be Saturday night because they'd always play San Francisco on Saturday night.
I'd be fine with Saturday.
I just don't want
Monday.
I would like Sunday.
Give me anything but Monday. That's my thing.
Give
anything
me Sunday.
Monday.
Sunday or we'll
take
it down.
Noon would
be
perfect. Do they do noon? I think they do. Noon 3:30.
Give me a noon game. Give me a noon game. I would.
See, you've learned at the end of your rookie season here, Dominique. It wasn't that long ago that you were telling us 3:25 is great. Oh, you've learned, Dominique.
I was always number one noon, but I could live with 3:25. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's fair. So I just want, as long as I get a cheesesteak in Philadelphia, I'll be good to go. So
we'll go to Geno's.
You're gonna do it. So we got that. We're gonna make it happen.
I'll tell you the really hot place. I can't remember it right now, but I know it.
We're gonna take care of that. So I think that's a good way to end this show, and we'll have another one later on in the week, especially when we'll know when the Packers play, and we'll just dive a little bit deeper into Philadelphia and get ready for playoffs now. Like they said, this is when it really does matter. So it'll be interesting to see what's to come within the next week or so. We thank you all for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, and I'm Dominique.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.